Right.
So, I guess the quicker they got rid of the quicker they said, hey, we want to hear. The thing is, so last time we left off, okay, by the, in Rashi, okay, where he explained why, Yehoshua, why Moshe chose Yehoshua to give the Masorah over to. Okay? And Rashi gave two reasons. The first reason was because Yehoshua was Mamis Atzmo Minurov, that he learned. He started learning from early youth. He was involved in Talmud Torah. Okay? And therefore, that's a very good thing. Somebody that has been from early youth trained in the correct ways. Okay? And the second reason Rashi gave was because Yehoshua had a Shem Tov. Okay? Shem Tov, and therefore he wanted to give the Masorah to Yehoshua. Okay, so we didn't. Okay, so that's where we left off. So we wanted to explain what's the Shem Tov. Okay, what's that idea? So somebody brought up the idea that Shem Tov, that since the person that's going to have the Masorah is the one that everybody will look to, and he is going to be the final word on what is Torah. Okay, so it should be somebody that people have a good relationship with, okay, that look up to, that consider him a worthy person. Okay? Okay, right? So that would seem to be true. I mean, that certainly is an important thing. People should look up to the person that's leading the generation. Okay. But the only question I would say is, when others look up to somebody and value him, does it matter why they look up to him? In other words, why the person has a good relationship with others. A person could have a good relationship with others for many reasons, and people could look up and admire a person for many reasons. Okay? Does it matter? Should it matter to us why they admire him? Or is it just important that they admire him for whatever reason? As long as people respect that person, then on that score, that's a good person to choose. Or does it matter why they respect him? Yeah.
Well, I think I have to understand why that's important. Like, what function the Shem Tov, what function that has in this scene here. Because let's say if it's like they're going to take, just because he's a Shem Tov, if it's just because they like him, and therefore they're going to accept whatever he says,
yes.
If it's they like him for his good looks, and they're going to accept whatever he says based on that, then the guy can totally distort or be incorrect about the system.
Okay, good. So in other words, we should differentiate. When we say Shem Tov, right, for what reason do people look up to him and like that person? What is the reason behind that? Okay? And depending on what the reason is, we will be able to ascertain whether Shem Tov is something we should look for altogether. Right? Many politicians have a very good Shem Tov. People trust them. People admire them or are attracted to them. But we wouldn't want that kind of Shem Tov. That's not a good attribute. That kind of Shem Tov is just somebody who's able to get people to identify with him, to look up to him, and to respect him. But those aren't necessarily good things. Okay? Okay, so the question is, what's the real Shem Tov, the real reason why others will respect the person and look up to him? Okay. So let's just go a little further. Let's hold that question. Okay? Go a little further. All right.
I don't know if I fully understand the question. Like, can it be that Shem Tov is just some external thing that people identify with the person, and he happens to be like a real chacham? Right. So like, when you have that combination, then you'll get somebody that people admire, and right. Since he's a chacham, he's not going to feed him lies.
That's right. Right. That was the original approach. But the question is Shem Tov on its own a good thing? Or is it just something that, hey, if you're in a position, you need to influence people, you better have a shame tov. What is a shame tov? It means people will listen to you. You see, or is shame tov a virtue on its own? Is that a good thing? Forget about whether you want to influence people. Is shame tov, is that something I should aspire for?
Right.
Regardless of whether I'm going to be able to use it or not.
Right.
That's the question. Now, it would seem that if Moshe is picking a leader, I mean, it would seem that shame tov is something more than just a useful thing for a politician, but it's something of intrinsic value that a person should want. Mm. If that's the case, what's the intrinsic value?
I mean, if you, let's say you know you're not going to be a leader.
Right.
Should you
try to... Yeah, shame tov. Who needs that? I'll take a shame raw. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Here's the question is, who you have a shame tov with?
What's that? Who you have a shame tov with? Yes.
Yeah.
That's true. Right.
Which would kind of bring into question, what do we mean by tov? If we're just in favor with the people, I mean, who are these people? I mean,
right. Who are these
Trump.
People?
That's you right. Could be the super Russian. That's why I have the shame tov, you know.
That's right. And if it's a shame tov only with discerning people and not with the general populace, so, I mean, you know, that's a very limited shame tov. There's one guy in the generation that likes you. Yeah, have a shame tov. Right? Old things. That if a guy wants to be a leader, he better curry favor with people and get a shame tov. Or no, a shame tov, in other words, Yehoshua had a shem tov. Now, how did he get that shem tov? Was it a natural thing that since he's living the correct life, he got a shem tov, and that's an inherent good? Or did he run after shem tov because he knew, hey, maybe Moshe's going to pick me, I better have a shem tov, people better like me, right? So that's how he got, right? Or do we say, no, shem tov is something that's a virtue, that's a good in and of itself, whether you want to be a leader or not. So it would seem to be that it's the second one, that a shame tov is something of inherent good. There's some virtue there. Okay, and on the contrary, a virtuous person is not really running to be a leader. He's not looking for fame. He's running away from that type of fame. You see, but nevertheless, he'll have a shame tov. Okay? Okay. So let's just look a little further, okay? And maybe we'll get some insight as to what the idea is. Okay? So if you look in Rashi, the next Rashi, he says, Yehoshua l'zakenim. The Yehoshua passed on the Masorah to the Zakenim. Okay? So Rashi says, V'lo ratza l'masra l'shivim zakenim shayu b'mei Moshe. Okay? So there was the shivim zakenim that was in the time of Moshe. Okay? He says that Yehoshua did not want to give it to them. It's not those Zakenim. Different Zakenim. Okay? Who are the Zakenim? He says, Ela Masara Lazkenim Shahayu Rodim Veshotrim Al Yisrael. But he gave it to the Zakenim, different Zakenim. The Zakenim that governed and became the rulers of Yisrael, of the Am. Those Zakenim. Okay? Then he quotes the Pasuk. Okay? He says, and then he says, the Pasuk is, Ve'yabdu ha'ames Hashem. Okay. But then he goes on. Then he says, Uzakenim halalu. Okay, that's all we need. Right? So he says, who did Yehoshua give it over to? Those individuals that governed the people, that ruled the people. Okay? That's who he wanted to give it to. What kind of an idea is that? That a person that's governing the people, that's leading the people, that's the person you want to give it over to. What is the special quality in that? A person that takes a position to govern, to rule the people, to help the people, to guide them in the correct path. That's the person you want. The person that wants to guide the Am.
Did you just translate? What was Rodim
and Shotrim? Rodim and Shotrim are those that are in positions of control. Okay, like rulers. In other words, those that enforce the law, those that get involved in the practical aspects of helping the Am live according to Torah, helping the arm abide by the laws of the Torah. Okay.
Aurora means chase.
Why a person wants to rule others is because for his own power, for his own sense of power, his own ego. Okay. But there's another reason why a person wants to rule, to help others, to control others. Okay. And where's the Rambam? It's in the first. So the Rambam has in the third mitzvah. Okay. The Rambam says. Okay. The Rambam says this: a mitzvah shlishis. He shesivanu li'avo yis'ale. A person is commanded to love God. Okay, and the Rambam says, and this is when the person is misboning, he comprehends and he understands God's mitzvos and God's actions, God's creations. Okay, when he gains an understanding of the Torah and the laws of nature, he studies natural science and he studies halacha, and he sees God's chachma. The Rambam says, "Nisaneg b'hasagaso tachlis atainuk." The person receives an enjoyment from this understanding, which is the height, the greatest enjoyment. He receives the greatest enjoyment when he gains an understanding of Torah, of ideas, and God's system. It's tremendous understanding from the ideas. Tremendous enjoyment. Okay? And the Rambam says, when a person gets that enjoyment, he says like this. He says, Kvar amru shemitzvah zu koleles gam kain. This mitzvah includes also shenidrosh v'nikra ha'anashim kulam la'avodaso. That a person goes and tries to explain to others what he has comprehended about God. He tries to explain to others this system, this chachma, and this enjoyable system, and he tries to show others this truth that he's discovered. Okay? That's part of the mitzvah of Avas Hashem. Okay? He says, V'zeh kishetahov adam, when a person has a love for something, so he praises it, and he tries to get other people to also gain an appreciation of this thing that he finds so wonderful. Okay, it's a natural reaction is he tries to get other people to appreciate something that he's discovered, which is the most unbelievable thing, and people are unaware of it. The natural human reaction is that he desires to show other people. Okay, so he says, okay, he says like this, once he realizes and he discovers this truth, hine ata b'lo safek tidrosh v'tikra hakofrim v'hasichlim v'yedias ha'emes. Okay, what he does is he sees people that are totally misguided, people that are wasting their lives, and have total ignorance, or living in the dark, he can't tolerate it. So what he does is, because he sees this chachma, he goes and he tries to show other people, and to correct them, and that they shouldn't waste their lives with false ideas. Okay? So that's part of Avas Hashem. But that Avas Hashem, the Rambam says, that is the ultimate in Avas Hashem. When a person reaches the level where he is so enthralled with his studies and with his knowledge of God, it's a natural result that it bothers him. He can't tolerate the idea that people don't know this. He goes out and he tries to help others. You see, that's a natural result of Avas Hashem. So the Rambam is saying that helping others, there's only two ways a person could help another. Help another person. Either he does it through identification. You see, when he helps the other person, that other person is part of him. He identifies with the other person, so he's helping himself. The only other way you can help another person is if He's doing it out of a love of truth. You see? That's the only way you can help another person. Because everything a person does really is selfish. Any action a person does has to emanate from his own self. So either he is helping another person, he's going out of his way to help another person because he identifies with that guy, you see, or he's helping the other person because he has a love of truth. It's an objective desire. He sees another individual who has a mind and who is ignoring everything that's clear as day. His love of the truth forces him to go help that person. Okay? It's a natural result of his love of the truth, and he must help that person. Okay? Otherwise, if he doesn't have that, it'd be very difficult for a person to just go help somebody else that he has no connection to. No connection, no knowledge of that other person, and no emotional attachment. A total stranger to just go over and have a tremendous desire to help that guy, where's that going to come from? If you know the guy, he's your neighbor, fine. You can have a tremendous desire to help him. Okay? But just a total stranger you don't know, you have no emotional connection to, have a tremendous desire to help him, to sacrifice and really go and want to save that guy? Not possible. Unless the person is on a level where he has a love of truth and he does it because objectively he sees there's a guy there that's living a false life, he can't tolerate it. You see? So that's what the Rambam is saying. The Rambam is saying, that's what Rashi's saying. Rashi's saying that the ones that he wanted to give it over were the ones that their life was to help Am Yisrael. You see, because they had a love of truth and they could not tolerate the fact that there should be an individual in Am Yisrael that's missing out on this unbelievable system. You see, that's a level of Avas Hashem you can't really fake. You see? So that's really who he chose. You see? That's who he wanted. Okay? That's really the idea of a Shem Tov. You see? Because a Shem Tov means like this. When the other person sees you helping him, he can tell what type of relationship you have. You see? He can tell, why is this person interested in me? Is it because of me, or is it because of him? Okay? And as a person has a way of knowing, when you relate to another person and you see that person's interested in you, you have a sense that either there's some kind of identity. Why is that man interested in me? You could sense, hey, I'm his friend. I identify with him. How does he treat the guy, stranger? Different, not treating him the same way. You see? So the interest in me, you could sense, is toloi, because we're friends, you see. If the friendship ends, I know that his interest in me will end. It is not a real, it's not an interest, his interest in me is not really in me. It's not me he's interested in, you see. We have a certain relationship, like a lot of times, a business partner, yeah, very good friends. But you know in the back of your mind, you see, if the business is over, not going to be the same. The relationship will change. He's not going to be calling me every night. Mm-hmm. You see? So he may be doing tremendous favors for me. He's such a good guy. He does everything. Brings me my coffee. He's so worried about everything. If I don't show up for work one day, he calls me. The guy's such a nice guy. Chesed, do anything for me. You see? That's very good. You could recognize tremendous chesed in another person. You see? But in the back of your mind, you know, you may not want to admit it to yourself, but you know the chesed is tied to some kind of relationship. You see? We're business partners, whatever it is. Okay? You know in the back of your mind that if the situation were not this way, if we weren't in business together, or whatever it is, or we weren't classmates, he wouldn't be doing this. Right? The interest in me would not be the same. Chesed would not be the same. You see, a chesed you do for a classmate, I work together in a class, identify, joke around, oh, of course I'm going to help the guy. That's that type of chesed is very good. But it's a chesed that's totally in something. Okay? 5 years from now, when we're not, high school is over, and I don't remember the guy, I drive right by him, oh, you got flat tires, sorry. You know that in the back of your mind. You see, so when you receive the chesed, it's not, you don't supply the person with the shame tov. You know, there's an ulterior motive, so to speak. You see, that you could sense. But you can also sense when a person is on a different level. And the chesed is because he has a certain kind of appreciation, certain kind of chachma that causes him to treat me this way. He has a certain type of appreciation of chachma and reality that causes him to relate to me this way. I see he's not relating on a personal level. He's relating on an objective level. You see, the chesed that he's doing, I see, is not just personal. He's not really deriving a personal pleasure out of this. This is an objective thing. You see, that type of person, you look at differently. You have a certain kind of respect for the guy, and he has a shame tov. It means it's an inherent shame tov. And not because of what he's doing, it's because what he's doing causes you to realize this guy is... This type of chesed is intrinsic. This is a permanent chesed. This chesed doesn't matter if I won't see the guy for 10 years or he'll forget who I am. It's a different kind of chesed. Not because of a personal relationship. You know what I mean? So that's the thing. The shame tov means, if a guy is a shame tov, it means people recognize in him that he's beyond the personal. And that's only possible if he has the true appreciation of emes. You see, avas Hashem, he has a true appreciation of chachma, then it's possible for the person to go beyond the personal. He's in the objective. You see, that's what he looked for. That was the shame tov. Yeah.
But why is it, for a guy that's on the level of a true avas Hashem, why is it objective to, teach knowledge? Like, I understand if you see someone in, a bad state, so you could say, you see a human being who's not, can't afford, a meal, so you could, objectively, you could just, give him money. But, why is teaching fall into that? Like you were saying, spreading ideas, he'll naturally want to spread.
Because what's a greater, what is a greater state of poverty than being poor of ideas? That's the greatest poverty a person could possibly have. He has no ideas. If a person has no money, okay, he has no money, fine. But he's got ideas. If a person doesn't have ideas, it means he has nothing. Money won't help him.
On the contrary, why would your love of truth make you want to make sure people have enough money? What's the connection?
Yeah, what's the connection there? You should ask, why should a guy help somebody who's financially in trouble? Okay? But again, financially in trouble is because the person needs finances to be in a proper frame of mind to live the correct life.
But it's not just that you want to rid him of his pain.
That's right. That's right. Because sometimes pain is a good thing. Pain is sometimes a good thing. If a person didn't have pain, he wouldn't know when he's sick. Okay? Sometimes a person's in pain because he's living a false life. One second. Not necessary to immediately take him out of his pain. Why don't you show him the true way? And naturally, he'll correct himself. You see, so taking out of pain is not necessarily chesed. But the chesed is putting a person in a situation where he could live like a person, you see? Where he could pursue something that will be of value rather than wasting his life. You see? So a person that really is concerned about that has to be somebody that's on a different level. He is not thinking, he doesn't wake up in the morning thinking about his own personal things, or who's he's better than, or who's better than him. He's not involved in that. He's gone beyond that. You see, so that's why that's That's what it's looked for. Because that means the person is on an objective level. Yeah.
I'm just not exactly sure why the term is Shinto. Sounds like, I don't know, it sounds like something else to me. It doesn't sound like. Shinto to me connotes like, I don't know, just translating it as a good name.
Right.
I mean, there's a tremendous mile, obviously, that we're talking about, but. I don't know. Can you explain that a little more?
I guess they're using Shame Tove because what happens is when a person gets when a person becomes an objective, when he operates on an objective level, he turns his attention to help people. That's what he does. You know, when a person has an appreciation of God's Chachma, the next reaction is he tries to help people. I see. So that's what I call Shame Tove. Because you're helping people, they're going to like you. You see, but the helping of the people is really to help them, and not for yourself. You see? So if you help a person because you're trying to help him, he knows it, and he looks at you. Nobody could say anything bad about you. You see, a guy who helps you because he's helping himself, and he's got an ulterior motive, you know, whatever. I have a curse to tell that he helped me, but different kind of shame. President helps me and didn't help him at all. It may have hurt him. He took off time from learning. It hurt him. He couldn't. He spent this whole day trying to help me. He didn't get anything out of it. He didn't get paid nothing. That kind of guy, you know, that's a true chesed. You see, true chesed causes shame tov because people look at him. Wow. Guy's really a mensch. That's the thing. See, the other doesn't cause Shem Tov because everybody has that. Everybody's looking for their own selfish thing. So they say, okay, this guy's doing that too. Okay? Fine. You see? But a guy sees somebody that's not looking for his own selfish thing, looking out for the other guy. That's a very different story. But that's only possible with a chachma. A person that doesn't have chachma can't do it. So why is he going to help the other guy? It doesn't make any sense. Why should he do it? Just stump to be a nice guy. I mean, doesn't work that way. You know what I mean? I'll be a nice guy because people are going to think I'm a nice guy, so now I'm getting something out of it. You see, but if a guy doesn't have chachma just to help another guy, it's impossible. Yeah.
So a guy like this, so I understand that a guy on a lower level, so when he helps someone, I understand what you're saying, where it's identification. But a guy who's on this level, so if he's helping someone, you're saying he's not doing it through identification anymore.
Right.
So why are you saying it's like a natural result of being involved in chachma? Like, well, I don't see that move. Like, well, like maybe you should say that when you're involved in chachma at that level, you just don't care about anyone else, and like not just because whatever, because you don't see how that identification anymore, and you're just like, why is there a natural result to help people? I don't see that.
I mean, we'll go. You know, later on, it's going to go into it a little more. Okay, so maybe we'll get to a little further. Okay. Okay. So let's just take a look now. If you go a little further, okay, in Rashi. Okay, so yeah.
So good.
Good.
So then, is Yehoshua? Because last week you explained that it was Moshe in the prior Rashi that Moshe seemed to have been looking for two qualities,
right?
Or at least Yehoshua displayed two qualities that, you know, that fit the parameters of who should be a Bal Mesor here.
Yeah.
Yehoshua following the same pattern, or because the other same pattern, the other aspect that you said was essential was the main misatzma.
Same pattern, yeah, same pattern.
Or are these people? He's not describing that here, though.
Well, he's not going to go through it because he already gave you the prototype. He gave you the model.
So when Yehoshua was picking the Zikanim, so apparently the Zikanim had the same
thing,
same quality,
as much as you can get. I mean, if you know, you get as much of those qualities as you can get. Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, so you have a very interesting thing. Then the Mishnah says like this, that who the Yehoshua gave it to the Zekanim, and the Zekanim gave it to the Nevi'im, and eventually the Nevi'im gave it to the Anshei Knesset HaGadolah. Okay. So who are Anshei Knesset HaGadolah? Who are they? All right. So Rashi says like this. Rashi says, so he quotes who they are. Okay. Zerubbabel, Nehemiah, Sariah, Re'alia. Okay. But And it was Bimei Ezra, Binyan Baisheni. So it was these individuals. Okay. But the thing is like this. The question is, Rashi says, Lama Nikru Anshei Knesset HaGadolah. Why do we call these people Anshei Knesset HaGadolah? Why do you give them that term? Unshaken Asagadon? Were they greater than the guys that came before them? Doesn't seem there's any indication they're greater than Moshe, greater than Yeshua, but somehow they're Unshaken Asagadon. Yes.
What's the literal name that would imply that it's greater?
Anshei Knesset, the men of the great assembly. Knesset HaGadolah. The great assembly.
Was this a place, like a shul or something like that?
We don't know. We just somehow... The great assembly, they're the men of the great assembly. Where did this... They got this name. They were fortunate enough to get this name, the men of the great assembly. And it stuck... And now, that's it. They got a great name. You know, sometimes...
Marketing.
Talk about Shem Tov. You know, marketing, yeah. I mean, you just sometimes... You just happen to get a moniker, right? And it sticks. Unshaken Asagadah. Okay? But then the Gemara came along and said, one second. Why are we calling them this? I mean, what's this Unshaken Asagadah? How come they got this name? Right? Okay, so the Gemara... So it's a Gemara in Yuma. Okay, it's on Samach Tes Amud Beis. Okay? The Gemara says like this. Gemara says, Lama Nikra Shman Anshei Knesset HaGadolah. Why do we call these people Anshei Knesset HaGadolah? Okay. So the Gemara says, "Is a good reason. Good reason. Shechziru atara liyoshna. They restored the atara, the crown, to its place. Okay. What crown? The Gemara says, Asa Moshe Amar Hakel Hagadol Hagibor Vahanora. And Moshe came. And he said the adjectives of God, right? Generally, we don't ascribe adjectives to God, right? We ascribe actions, okay? Machaya Mason, he brings back, he resurrects the dead. Gomel Chasadim Tovim, he does chesed, okay? We describe him with his actions, but we don't ascribe attributes to him because God has no attributes. We can't say he is kind. We could say he does kindness. Okay? Right? But Moshe said, Moshe was the only one that ascribed. Of course, it means the same thing. It doesn't mean he is these things, but he used the terms vis-a-vis God. He said, Gibor, Ata Gibor. How's it go?
Gadol
Gibor Venora. Okay? So he used terms that nobody else could use. Okay? So again, of course, it doesn't mean that God is Gadol and Gibor, because we can't describe that God has attributes. He's one. So if you'd say he's a Gibor, and he's a Nora, and he's a Gadol, so you're saying there are three parts. Right? But we say that God is one, that he's a unity. So you cannot really say that God, the way we understand it, you can't say God is a Gibor. It's nonsensical. Okay? So we don't understand really what Moshe meant. So when we say that in Shmon Esrei, we're not machavin to the terms, we're machavin to the fact that whatever Moshe Rabbeinu meant, that's what we mean. Okay? But still in all, we say, Gadol Gibor Venora. And that was instituted by Moshe. Okay. So what happened? So what happened was... Hakela Gadol Gibor Venora, right. So what happened was, Yirmiyahu came along, V'amar, and he said, Nachrim Mekakarim Beheichalo. He said that Goyim are singing and dancing in the Kodshe Kodshim. They took over the temple, and Goyim are dancing and singing in the Kodshe Kodshim. Aye Norosov. Where's God's awesomeness? How can you use the adjective that God is awesome? Well, where's the awesomeness? is the base of Mikdash is overrun by Goyim. Okay, so Lo Amar Nora. So Yirmiyahu took out the term Nora. That's it. He said when you in Shmoneh Esrei Hakel Hagadol Hagibor, that's it. No Nora. Okay. He says, Asa Daniel, then Daniel came along, Omar Nachrim Mishtabdim Bebanov Ayegvurasov. He said, the Bnei Yisrael are in captivity. So where's God's Gvura? His people are subjugated by a foreign nation. Where's the Gvura? Where's God's strength? Lo Amar Gibor. That was it. He got rid of Gibor. Okay? This is getting shorter and shorter. So you got Hakel, Hagadol. That's it. No Gibor and no Nora. Shmoneh is getting shorter. That's it. Okay? Says like this. Asu Inahu, Anche Knesset Hagadola came along. V'yamru. And they said, 1 second. Adarava. On the contrary. Zuhi Gvurosov. This is his Gvura. Why? Shekovish as Yitzro. God is Kovish as Yetzer. Shenosein Erech Apayim L'Rishayim. Because he, you have Rishayim, who subjugated his people, who have his people in Golos, and he's patient. He's Kovish as Yetzer. He's not reacting right away. He is, so to speak, holding his temper. Of course, I'm just speaking metaphorically. We can't say this about God, but it means, insofar as we perceive that he is Kovish as Yitzro. A person normally would want to react. He's not reacting. So that is Gevura. Kovish is a Gibor, Kovish as Yitzro. Okay? He says, the Elu Heino Rosov, where is his awesomeness? Sheil Mole Mora, Shal Kash Barchu, Hech Umaachas Yecholulis Gaim Beino Umos. He says, no, on the contrary. God's awesomeness, you could see God's awesomeness. Because if God were not awesome, how could it be that the Jewish people, the entire world, armies came against the Jews and were victorious against them, and still the nation survives. Somehow they can't wipe out this little group of people. So years later, the people still exist. That's awesome. Okay? No armies could destroy them. Okay? So they said like this. They brought it back. They said, you could say it again. Okay, Elah, Gadol, Gibor, Vanora. All right? That's why they called Anshei Knesset Gadol. Because they brought back these terms to the Shmoneh Esrei. Okay. But then the Gemara goes on. The Gemara says, Hechi Yavid Hachi. How? V'Rabbanan Hechi Yavid Hachi. How could Yirmiyahu and Daniel do this? How could they take out these terms? He says, Hechi Avdi Hachi V'Akri Takanta Desakin Moshe. How could they remove the Takanas Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe was Masak in these terms. How could they take them out? Gemara says, Am Abaye. I'm sorry. Am Rabbi Elazar Mitoch Sheyodin Bakarash Baruch Hu Shamitihu. Since they know that the Mita of Akarash Baruch Hu is truth, Lefichach Lo Kizbubo. Therefore, they did not want to lie. They're saying a lie. Because there's no, you can't say a falsehood in Shmoneh Esrei because God is miti. Okay? So that's what they said. That's how Yirmiyahu and Daniel took it out. Because even though Moshe was masak in it, but you can't tell a falsehood. God is ohev MS, and if it's not true, you can't say it. So I just like to understand one thing. I mean, you're telling me that if a guy says Gibor and Nora, it's a lie? It's an absolute lie? So I mean, what's the Gemara's question? Of course you have to take it out. Gemara is saying, how could Moshe made a takana? That you must say, Hakela Gadol Gibovan Nora. How could Yirmiyahu and Daniel do such a thing? Take these terms out? Simple answer, it's a lie. It's not true. I mean, if it's not true, if it's an absolute lie, right? So what was Gemara's kasha? Of course you take it out. This is a big chiddush. We would think you have to say it. Let's see, why did they take it out? Oh, I got it, it's a lie. It's an impossibility. First of all, it's not a lie, because you're saying that if a person's a gibor, and at this second he's not fighting, now he's a weakling. I mean, a gibor, it doesn't mean that if God is a gibor, it doesn't mean that every moment he has to be expressing his gevurah. He's a gibor. Okay, when will he be a gibor? When he goes to war. Right now, he's sitting having a cup of coffee. I mean, the guy's a great warrior. He's sitting having a cup of coffee. Hey, where's your gevura? Oh, that's it. You guys aren't a gevura. It doesn't make any sense. Okay? So what does the Gemara mean? It's a lie. I mean, you can't say that the Gemara meant it's just an absolute lie. So then what's the kasha? I mean, of course you have to take it out.
And how'd they bring it back?
Two ideas in Sheker. There's the content of a statement could be false. If I say it's raining outside and it's sunny, it's a false statement. The statement itself is false. But sometimes you could have a true statement, but the person saying it, it's false for him. In other words, it's a hollow statement for him. It may be, the content may be true, but you have no right to say it because you don't see any expression of it for you. It's a fraudulent claim. You see, you're just saying it. But it's a hollow thing. It's hollow. You don't really relate to that. You have no way of relating to that. You're just uttering it. You see? So for you, it's a hollow statement. So that's what Yirmiyahu and Daniel said. They said, the Gemara said, how could they take it out? The content is true. That's a true statement. God's mitos don't change. The answer is, what they said was that God's ohev emes, he loves the truth. The truth exists in two frameworks. You see, it's the content, but not only that, but the one verbalizing it must be able to affirm that it's true. If he's saying it and he can't affirm it's true, for him it's shaker. You see, it's possible to be a person that's fraudulent even though you're saying the truth. Because insofar as you're concerned, it's a fraud. You don't really believe that. You see? So that's the that's the emes, that a person has to be lifnei Hashem. Not only that everything he says, the content is true, but he has to be, when he says it, he has to be a person that it's not a hollow statement. If it's a hollow statement for him, that's sheker. That means you got up in front of God, you said something that might be true, but for you, it's not really true. You don't really believe it. Huh. Yeah.
Well, then it's checker, just because, also, just I think this stresses it well, that if people are removed, just don't have the true idea, then whatever idea they're going to have in mind when they say it is simply just not true, because they just don't have the true one.
Right.
So it's not just how it's it, because they're going to have an idea when they say it. They're going to have something in mind. Some kind of conception.
They're going to have something in mind, yes.
And that's just, if they're removed from the true one, that means whatever that one is not true. That's
right.
A lie.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Just to clarify,
you can't be, if you're in a situation where it's something that a person, everything that's expressed is the exact opposite, and a person can't really... For the person, it's a hollow statement. You see, even if you say, I mean whatever Moshe Rabbeinu meant. But if he's in a situation where it's a hollow statement, that's also sheker. You see, he lacks in the conviction. If he lacks in the conviction, even if the thing is true, you have no right to say that to God. You see, that's sheker too, because you lack in the conviction. Why are you saying it? Might be true. But why are you saying it? It's not, you're not sincere. So that's also Sheker. It's a fake. Right? That's the thing. The fraudulence goes beyond what you say. That's fraudulent too.
So they could they have just said, look, we don't...
It's not just in what you say. If you can't say it honestly, that's Shekhatu. Interesting thing. Apparently it doesn't go by the individual. I mean, it's a good point. I understand what you're saying. I mean, if a person can't really say this honestly, right, because of his own situation, you see, apparently it doesn't go by the individual. You see? Then he has to say that he's conforming with the system. He has a mate because that's the system. You see? Can't go by each individual. Otherwise, nobody would be dominating. You know, this thing, take this out. That, no, that's fine, but Tefillahs will be very, sorted Tefillahs. Each guy's got his own. What are you saying today? Not going to work out. But the concept is, the point is the concept is true. Concept is true. And that's why when a person is mispalel, he should have that concept. Say. It's not just much as just saying words, but I have to attach a meaning to this. This is something that is significant. He has to give it significance and say, this is a real thing. One second. Am I just saying words, or is this really true? And I mean, if the person in his heart thinks it's not true, he's lacking in tefillah. He's lacking in tefillah. Right? That's the thing. So now the only question is, what's the machlokas between, how did Anshei Knesset, the great assembly, the men of the great assembly, right, how are they able to bring this back? You know, it seems this is pretty convincing, formulation. How did they have the strength, the fortitude to bring it back? Yeah.
Well, they did it at a later time, didn't they?
Yes.
So the...
But the situation hadn't changed because they argued on principle. Right? Let's take their argument. Okay? Daniil said, Gvura, let's say. Where's the Gvura? The people are enslaved. Where's God's Gvura? He's a Gibor. Right? So he said, no, they may be enslaved, but God is certainly not jumping the gun. He's certainly not just responding, where a guy just lashes out. He's not, not rash, taking his time, Kovish is Yitzro, let's see the situation, let's not get overly excited here. And we'll proceed with caution, right? All of these things, of course, we're not saying that God has it, but what we're saying is that it shows us a certain mida. You see, when we see that action, we could learn from there a certain mida, a mida of controlling yourself. So that's what that's what Anshei Knesset Gadol said. The mida of controlling yourself, we could learn from him. You see, but the other mida. But that's a kind of gevurah too. So what's wrong with that? That's gevurah too. So what was there? What's the debate? Now, as according to Daniel, gevurah is not only if he's going to destroy the enemy. And according to Anshei Knesset Gadol, no, gevurah is also if I'm covetous Yitzro. That's gevurah too. What are the two sides? Subjugate his opponent, right? He could subjugate the opponent. Of course, there's no such thing as gvur with God because you can't say God has an opponent. I mean, God's it's totally there is no God is not over somebody else. There's no fight. There's no contest between God and anybody else. It's everything is God's will. So there's no such thing as real gvura. But the way we see it, gvura is where you have a person that is capable of subjugating his opponent. That's gvura. You see? So gvura, so that's why Daniil said there's no gvura, because there is no manifestation of gvura. Where's the manifestation? God has an opponent here, and they're doing whatever they want. So there is no express manifestation of gvura. You see? So he held it has to be manifest. If it's not manifest, there may be gvura there. If it's not manifest, can't say it. You see? But Anshei Knesset HaGedolah said, it doesn't have to be manifest. As long as it, through insight, a person could derive that midah. You see, as long as there's a way to derive the midah of gvura. And they said you could derive it. Because insofar as God doesn't act, that expresses a different meter of gvura, an internal gvura, which is just as great a gvura as gvura against your enemy. Because gvura against your enemy is opposing an external enemy. But opposing an internal enemy, that's certainly gvura. That requires tremendous strength. That's an internal strength. That's a real strength. So he said that strength is subtle. It's subtle, it's not manifest. A person that doesn't have insight won't notice it. You see, but it is expressed. So he says, as long as it's expressed somewhere, you can say it. You see, you have a relationship to that quality. So you can say it. You see, but they maintain that if it's not manifest, you can't do it. And Nora also, the awesomeness. That was the same thing, because Yirmiyahu said there's no awesomeness, it's not manifest. How could you say awesomeness means that a being is feared, that he's revered? A certain image that people are afraid. God, very, very terrifying. You see? There's nothing, no manifestation, because there's a place where people worship. People are running around. There's no, he doesn't carry within any kavod. So the awesomeness is gone. Yonche Knesset HaGedolah said like this, what was their awesomeness? That, oh, how could you have a nation that exists? That's awesomeness. What kind of awesomeness is that? That there's a nation that all the world wants to destroy, and somehow they still manage to survive. Where's the awesomeness? Why is that an awesome thing? He's saying, in other words, awesomeness sometimes is unbelievable. Tremendous, huge magnitude, like it awes you. But sometimes a person is awed by a small fact, but it is very unbelievable. It's an awesome thing. In other words, that you have tremendous forces operating, an intricate, a whole thing, tremendous forces operating. You have one small being or one small group that somehow, because of the intricacies of the way everything worked out, they survived. You see, it's not awesome in terms of size, magnitude, you see, but it is awesome qualitatively. In terms of the quality, there's a certain awesomeness. You look at that, you go, wow. You see, sometimes a thing could be very minute, and yet a guy goes, wow, how does that work? It's a tiny little thing, but how did that manage to operate in that way? It's like defies imagination. You see, not because of the... Sometimes it defies imagination, the universe. The person looks out, the stars, the huge, unbelievable vista. It's awesome. Wow, how could such a thing exist? Huge. You see, the sheer size of a thing. But sometimes it's not the size of the thing, but just a certain fact, a certain quality. How does that thing operate? It might be an atom. Could be awesome. Like, Adam, wow, look at that. You could have two forces there. You have a nuclear force and the electronic force, and it operates in opposition to each other, and the thing is in perfect equilibrium. The thing's a tiny thing, you see? But there's a different kind of awesomeness, you see? How the thing works. This is that kind of awesomeness. So they said, this awesomeness is not manifest. The guy's not going to look at it and go, oh, this is unbelievable. You need a certain sensitivity to discern it. You see, so it is a subtle thing. But the awesomeness is certainly there. If you point it out to a guy will go, wow. See, but you have to point it out. That's why they say nowadays, they say, they have these, you know, that the Jewish people, what are the chances of the Jewish people surviving over this many of years and existing, and they went down and up and down, and no other nation, and it defies the laws of nature that such a thing could exist. You see, now if a person looked closely into that, you might go, oh, you're right, this is inexplicable. You see? But you have to point it out to the guy. He's not going to go, it's not going to like hit him and, oh, how do you have this? Right? It's something that's subtle. But that's what they said. They said it's awesome nonetheless. So as long as the Midah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, you could derive it, you could see it, it's expressed in some form, that's good enough. So they held no. They held they're wrong. We hold this is the right way. So they brought it back. So because of that, they're called Anshei Knesset Gedolah. Yeah.
No, you're going to explain why? I mean.
Because when those terms were missing, it's not just, okay, we could take it either way. We just want to know what's the right svara, whatever, and we'll say whatever you need to say. No, apparently, when those terms were taken out, that was something that was destructive to the Om. That is necessary. In other words, every word of tefillah has a certain place and it creates a relationship between the mispalel and God. You see, if a person leaves something out of tefillah, there's an essential, something essential that's missing from how he relates to God. You see, that's why Moshe Rabbeinu put it in there. These terms, apparently, when a person says this and thinks about the Moshe Rabbeinu put this here, it has an impression on the person, makes an impression on the person. If a person can't say it, he can't say it, but it's not a good thing. It means the Om is going to miss something. Is something missing? You see, but they couldn't. They had no choice. They had to take it out. You can't have sheker. You see, but Anshei Knesset Gedolah were able to work out a way to put it back in. That's a tremendous thing. Now the tefillah is bishleimusa. A person could relate to God in a complete way. That's Gedolah. That's a great thing. Yeah.
I'm not confused though, because we were saying
to be manifest, or as long as it's expressed, that's it. That's good enough. Okay?